to this, the 53rd Wikibon Peer Insight Research Meeting. My name is Dave, and I'm here with my buddy Steve. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Dave.
And we're going to talk about 2009 storage budget cuts. What can be done? You know, Steve, nothing changes everything quite like a recession, and this one promises to be a doozy, doesn't it?
Looks like it.
Wikibon users are telling us that their budgets are being cut between 10 and 30%, or even more.
I know, Dave. I've really never seen IT people face such drastic cuts. Let's take a listen to this storage administrator.
Percent.
You're seeing a 75% cut in your budget?
Correct.
That was Grant, a senior storage administrator at a large financial firm, and he was our guest today on the call. We talked to Grant and Nelson Nahum, an LSI fellow, about how heterogeneous storage virtualization can support smaller budgets in 2009.
Right. Let's listen to what Grant has going on in his shop, which is pretty similar to a lot of the IT professionals that I talked to today.
Our storage for virtualization will be close to over 300.
So you have 300 terabytes virtualized, is that right?
We'll be virtualized. Currently, at this time, we got about 254.
Out of how many in total in the shop?
About 700 terabytes.
And how many servers are you supporting?
We are supporting about 400 servers.
400 servers. And the primary applications are, what do you mentioned SQL. I mean, what are your primary applications that you're supporting?
SQL and Exchange are our primary servers.
Nelson Nahum believes that these challenges can be addressed very nicely with storage virtualization and help users get a better price.
Many customers, even before turning up the storage virtualization product, they got very good prices on storage expansion from the storage vendor. Used to be that the storage vendor knew that the only way to expand the storage is to buy the same storage. And if you compare the price per terabyte of a disk drive in Fry's and the price per terabyte of a disk drive in your storage vendor, there is a huge gap. So what happened is that many smart customers bought storage virtualization and told the vendor, listen, I have storage virtualization here. I can use and choose any storage I want. If I want a tier one, I had a customer that told me that they always buy tier one, but they invited all the three letters acronym companies, and they say, give me the best price. I don't want the storage feature, the software. Just give me the best price per terabyte. If you want tier two, the same. You can ask each one to give you the best price, and you can pick and choose. And just the fact that you can pick and choose, in general, the customers keep going with the same storage vendor, but just the fact that the salesman know that you can pick and choose give them a tremendous discount that basically pay for the storage virtualization software by itself in the first acquisition of new storage.
You know, Steve, listening to Nelson talk, it reminds me of that old story about the CIO putting an Amdahl coffee cup on his desk the day the IBM mainframe sales rep is coming to the call.
Ah, the good old days. But Dave, did they even have CIOs back then?
Yeah.
Come on.
I don't think so, actually. That's a good point, Steve. And I actually don't think IBM had anything but mainframe sales reps. You know, one thing, though, about those reps is they used to sell things like storage pooling and automated provisioning and online migration.
Start implementing storage virtualization, then you have a storage pooling. That means that all the storage is available to all the servers. You don't have anymore the situation that you have a storage box full and a storage box half empty, and you cannot use this storage to expand the volume from the other one. This is one of the typical cases that I think that is the main reason why Grant is using the system. If you move forward, we have a team provisioning that agree is not something that you will want to do for every application, but there are many applications that like file systems and things like that are the best for team provisioning. And in this case, you can give them as much as capacity that they want because only the data that will be really written will be allocated. Online migration, this is another capability of storage virtualization. If you leave storage, you are in a position that at any moment you can migrate the storage without any downtime, without any pain. So you can renegotiate leave storage and you can return leave storage. This is a big advantage to reduce costs.
Okay, Dave. So what Nelson had to say is definitely pretty interesting from a technology perspective. But my question is how is all this technology really going to help me address budget cuts as I go into 2009?
Here again is Grant.
Help us with the budget cuts is now we can pull all the subsystems into one, so now we can find storage anywhere we go. And the hardest problem is right now is, like I said, we have storage, or application needs storage that's on a fabric that does not have enough storage for them. So if it comes down to it, we usually would go buy more storage on that fabric. With the SVM, now we can consolidate everything, which comes out with able to save a lot more money. A lot of our subsystems are virtualized. We could go down to specific systems that, let's say there is one SQL server, and they're for one project, and they're requiring 600 gigs to 1 terabyte of use. We go back in there, we realize that they're only using 30% of that storage. Now what virtualization is, we can start virtualizing everything. So we got same provisioning going on. And if we have an emergency, let's say a code red incident comes up where we need storage right away for approximately 3 months of use, we can use some of their storage to give to them for short-term use. And that's where a good way for virtualization to come help us out. One file system is using this data and hasn't been using this data for 6 months, we might pull them over to a Tier 3 now and we'll leave them at the archives.
All right. So I think what Grant is saying makes a lot of sense, right? So his use cases really seem like they would help me save a lot of money. So if that's the case, and I'm anxious to get going on this, how do I really get started?
Nahum advises, start small and grow as you learn.
The starting is very easy. It's much easier than you will think. People tend to think, I have a big data center, now how I virtualize that? We start with small and then in very small increments also. And once the customer understands how to migrate or how to import data that is not virtualized to the virtualization environment, that is really literally take a few minutes, then you can grow over the time.
You know, Steve, I'm skeptical that it's that easy. To go from what essentially is a standing start to an infrastructure that has this support of heterogeneous arrays, isn't that going to require a lot of planning?
Maybe, Dave. But here's what I heard.
All right. Really, no, it's not difficult at all. It's extremely simple as it is. We're still constantly doing it. We are grabbing a lot of our legacy servers and virtualizing them. But I could speak to transforming a lot of our legacy systems into virtualization, and it's extremely easy to do. The only thing is there's got to be reboots for the host agents to be installed if you're using the SVM 4. But with the SVM 5 coming out, you don't have to do any reboots. But once doing that, it's extremely easy to do. We do our quick node migration, which we have an in-house built tool that we use when we're migrating a legacy system to virtualization. But from migrating from virtualized to virtualized, it's extremely simple. We use the multi-copy or the multi-migrate.
So I'm wondering, what does the pre- and post-virtualization environment look like?
Grant would actually say there's a pretty big difference between the pre- and post-environment. Let's have a listen.
When we have different arrays, we don't have headaches at all. We'll introduce what's virtualization. When it comes to not being virtualized, it becomes a bigger headache because when you get to the subsystem, you got to create an array for it. And sometimes when you don't have virtualization, when you create the array, you create the volume. Most of the times that volume is going to be, they're going to use that entire volume within, let's say, 6 to 9 months. When it comes to headaches is when you need to expand them. If they have 20 gigs left in that volume, but they need 30 gigs to put a new application, what comes out to it is we have to create another volume just to give them that enough space. With the virtualization introduced, now we don't have to do that because on the array, on the subsystem, we create an array. With that array, we use the entire array to create one pool. We throw it into virtualization, and we create one volume. That volume is, let's say, 65 gigs. If they come down to it, well, we're at 55 gigs, but we have an application that needs 15 gigs. All we do is expand it with that pool in there. It gives us no headaches. It gives us a lot easier manageability and feasibility.
Interesting. Well, it seems to me this must cost an arm and a leg to implement.
If you listen to Nelson, doesn't sound like it.
So Grant didn't grow from day zero to 254 terabytes of virtualized storage. Actually, one of the main features of SVM we have is that you can install very gradually. It's LAN by LAN, server by server. You can start with, if you want, with one LAN and one server. And slowly, during the in a period of time, you can add very easily more applications, more. We have a function that import current existing data into the virtualization environment, so it takes a few minutes to have a from a LAN that has data till the same LAN becomes a virtual volume and has repurposed the same data to the same server. This is on the, let's say, on the labor expense. It's very easy to start and very easy to grow over the time. It's not one day I want to virtualize my whole data center. The second question is regarding the price of starting. And in our particular case, the price is according to the capacity virtualized. So if you start with very small amount of capacity, then you pay very little. And over the time, the more you virtualize, you pay more licenses according to the capacity. So definitely, both from the pricing perspective or the investment that need to be done and the investment in labor, it is perfect to start in an environment like this that the budget is very, very small.
Okay. Well, I'm still a little bit skeptical. A lot of the customers that I've talked to say they face a lot of risk and complexity in going from a non-virtualized environment to a virtualized environment. So my other question is, if it's so great, why isn't everyone doing it?
I have to agree with you, Dave. In the beginning of any new technology, there's always the adoption barrier. But I think people are starting to get more comfortable with virtualization. Let's take a listen to David Floyer, an experienced practitioner and former IBMer.
The steps of implementation, there's a pretty important planning step that has to be taken first. There's the planning of the network itself. So it's planning that the storage network, the SAN, the switches, etc., are compatible with the specific implementation of heterogeneous the specific vendor's equipment that you've chosen. So things like zoning have to be looked after. Compatibility of the SAN itself, the switches, the microcode levels. For some of the implementations, it's necessary to implement additional equipment in the switches themselves to add particular function. So there's a number of things on the actual network that need to be done. The second is to make sure that the setup of the servers, the naming, the HBAs, etc., are all compatible with that same network. And then the third is to make sure that the storage equipment itself is qualified, specifically qualified by the vendor. Some of the older stuff is quite likely not to be qualified, or it may well need an upgrade in terms of microcode levels. And there's often an issue with clashes in microcode levels between, for example, the latest level of a database, our Oracle database, which may require one level of microcode, and the actual qualification, which may be several microcode levels back. So there's a number of just planning issues, choice issues about which equipment to put on the network, issues in terms of, well, opportunity issues in many ways, and in which storage to actually bring over onto the array network. One of the steps of setting up a heterogeneous network is that the first time you put an array on, You need to migrate stuff. You need to move the stuff from its normal state to the virtualized state. And that has to be done. There are a number of options with the appliances where it helps you do that. You can do that. You can set up a volume on the appliance, and then you can attach the external volume to that appliance, and then it'll suck the data from it while it's still attached, but it still needs an initial disconnect. So there's always, as you move it into that environment, an issue of moving them and disconnecting them from the servers. There's usually a significant amount of time that's required over weekends during maintenance slots to get the stuff ready and then to move the arrays across. So it's something that if you, in an ideal world, you would like to take a piece at a time. You'd like to take a small appliance, just pay for some of the virtualization and move things over piece by piece, choosing the arrays. The challenge in environments like this is that there's a greater emphasis on not buying new equipment and utilizing the equipment better, so people are pushing to move those arrays over faster. And then that puts a lot of pressure on people getting it right, planning it, and just the raw elapsed time for moving data across into the virtualized environment.
Okay, Dave, that sounds like some sound advice. What other types of things should we pay attention to?
One of the advantages of a heterogeneous strategy by selling it through, for example, HP, is that you can then qualify all of the equipment from that manufacturer and then know that that all of that that hardware is going to be supported, or IBM, or whoever the qualification comes from. So it works in theory, but it's certainly an issue if you're trying to fit together too many pieces of equipment from different vendors all together on the same box. That can cause issues. So I would suggest that the heterogeneous story is a little patchy in terms of its total breadth of ability to put stuff on. It's much easier if you restrict to one vendor and that they've qualified everything on that particular box.
So I think what I learned on this call today is that heterogeneous storage virtualization has a lot of promise in terms of helping people reduce the budgets, but it's really, really good news if you're already there today. If you're not there yet, you're going to face some challenges in getting there just in terms of cost and complexity. The other good news I think I heard is that LSI is bringing this technology to the mainstream, and that's good news for users. Where does the LSI technology fit? Let's listen to Nelson Nahum talk about SVM5 and its strategic positioning.
Main features of SVM we have is that you can install very gradually. It's LAN by LAN, server by server. You can start with, if you want, with one LAN and one server. And slowly, in a period of time, you can add very easily more applications, we have a function that import current existing data into the virtualization environment. So it takes a few minutes to have from a LAN that has data till the same LAN becomes a virtual volume and has repurposed the same data to the same server. We work with the customer and in the planning and in the implementation way. And again, because the fact that you can start very small, and you can small in the amount of virtual capacity and small in the amount of the budget because of the capacity, you can say, a customer can say, you know what, I want to start this virtualization. I have a new project that would be a good case. You have a new project and you cannot buy the storage, but you have storage available in a system that, you know, you cannot reclaim. So, okay, you virtualize this storage maybe 1 terabyte, 2 terabyte, 4 terabytes, and you give to this, you build this small virtualization environment inside the whole complex.
This is Dave Vellante from the Wikibon Project, and I hope you found this week's Peer Insight Review informative and useful. If you'd like to participate in Wikibon, please go to www.wikibon.org. That's www.wikibon.org and sign up. Everyone's welcome. There's a lot of excellent information for IT pros there. Check out the wiki. You'll find case studies, how-to notes, and professional alerts, all produced for IT people. Don't forget to check out the Peer Insight Archive, where this audio will be stored, along with other great research meetings that we've had. If you are so inclined, please share insights and opinions with peers. Write a wiki tip, ask a question, post some comments, but be warned, whatever you put up will be mercilessly edited. So remember, be true to your experiences. There's no room for commercials, just honest advice. And if you have a topic or question you want to discuss, click on Ask a Question, and who knows, perhaps we'll be discussing that at our next Peer Insight call. Thanks for listening, and thanks for being a Wikibon member. Bye for now.